This is the Left Field Thinking podcast, and today we are reflecting on the career of one of GB hockey's greatest players. A serial winner as an Olympic, Commonwealth and European champion, today we are joined by Shona McCallan. Shona has 122 combined international caps for GB and England. In addition to her gold medals, Shona also has won bronze at the Tokyo Olympics and at the 2017 European Championships. I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Okay, hello and welcome back to the Left Field Thinking podcast with me, Will Murray, and my little Scottish friend, Gavin Byers. Morning, Gav.
Morning.
Today we are delighted to be joined by GB and England hockey legend, Shona McCallan. Shona, you can be a legend there because you're retired, so that's appropriate. Hello, Shona.
Is that a morning? Is that a compliment in there somewhere? I think so.
We'll go with it. So what are you up to at the moment?
Well, it's Friday morning, time of recording, fairly early. So not much at the moment. But in general, I have just come back from 6 weeks away, much warmer climates than here. So I went over to Asia and Australia to catch up with some friends over there and have a bit of time off. And then I've returned just in time for the start of the second half of the domestic English hockey season in Reading. So, yeah, getting stuck into the coaching player, assistant coaching there, and also doing some work with 292 Performance, which is, yeah, a business that I'm working for at the moment, which works in high-performance sports. So straight back into things.
You've really got all the listeners on side by saying you've just spent 6 weeks away in Asia and Australia, they. They're really sympathetic to you now, whatever happens.
Yeah, temperatures were 35 degrees plus every day. The sun was shining. It was blue skies. It was a really tough time for me to be away.
Yeah, sounds awful. So let's jump straight into your international retirement. That obviously happened in October. Really close to make the decision in an Olympic cycle, obviously with Paris coming up. What was the sort of the deciding factors around that decision?
Yeah, I've had a lot of comments like that. You know, why do you not just hold on to the Olympics? Why it's so close? I think when you know, and it would have been just a really big disservice to the team, the group, and to me to hang on when your heart's not fully in it. I've always someone that's been fully in with something. See that like kind of the way that I play as well. Like I get stuck in. I'm gritty. Yeah. Give it my all, and the fire had just gone out a little bit, and yeah, it was time for something new. So I've been retired now a couple months, and I look back on my career with really fond memories, no regrets at all, and I'm just really grateful for the career that I've had, which is just a really great way to end your international career, because I know so many people don't get kind of that opportunity. There are challenges, of course. Being a professional athlete to then be a retired one, it is challenging. You know, if you type into Google, retiring athlete challenges or whatever, there's so many articles, there's so much research on it. Like it is challenging, but on a whole, I'm doing really well. The 6 weeks away helped quite a lot. And I'm just excited for like a new chapter. As cliche as it sounds, I'm excited for more freedom in my life. You know, I was saying to a friend the other day, you know, I went straight from school, straight into uni, then straight from uni into the centralized program. And my uni experience, it was in Holland, and I was essentially living life as a professional athlete over there. I didn't do the uni experience that you get in England and I'm presuming Scotland as well and Wales as well. So I never had that kind of real freedom that you get. So I'm just really enjoying like having, yeah, freedom and being able to choose when I do things and not be dictated by a schedule or have a little person on my shoulder being like, oh, should you really be eating that because you're training in an hour, or should you really be staying up till 2 a.m. because you've got a match? You know, so it's just nice just to be a bit more relaxed and enjoy life a bit more.
Gav, did you have any of those issues? I can't imagine you were worried about what you're eating all that much.
What are you trying to say? I looked after myself very well. No, I think exactly what Shona said. I think I had those feelings sort of coming towards my Scotland career just before the Commie Games. Like my body was giving up a little bit, and the mind still wanted to go, but like for me physically, my hip was kind of done, and it was becoming harder and harder to recover from after training, play multiple games inside a couple of days or a couple of weeks or whatever. And yeah, I think the biggest thing that Shona just said about sort of the freedom of when you don't have that sort of objective or goal or driving force behind what you do every day, what you eat, how you train, all these different things. It's like a strange thing, but it's like a freeing thing. And I suppose, yeah, now I think the excitement of what's next, I think as a hockey player, you're always very goal-driven and objective-driven. And it's like, okay, what's next? This is what I'm striving for. This is what I'm striving for. When that sort of goes away, it's like, right, well, I need to go and find something else, whether it's in your profession or any other aspect of your life. So I'd be lying if I said I've let myself go a little bit. So now I need to go and find a new sort of goal. And for me, yeah, professionally, like I'm working at a school and trying to sort of get on the ladder of coaching and seeing how high that can take me. So that's a big driving factor. But yeah, when I saw like the hip surgeon, he was like, this is usually the time when I tell people to go and take up triathlon. And I won't be doing that, just to let you know. I'm not a triathlete.
You were saying yesterday you were scared of swimming, weren't you?
Oh yeah, like I'm a poor swimmer. I have my 50-meter badge. That's where I'm at.
Widths or lengths?
I think I was just like round in circles. I'm not sure. And it was also like 20 years ago.
Was it up and down in the pool? If you're not a good swimmer.
Yeah. To the bottom, touch the bottom, back
the
up
bottom,
to the top.
Back up to the top.
So in your retirement announcement, Shona, you spoke about the mental and physical energy required to be part of the central programme. What was that environment like as a player?
It's full on. And of course, you expect it to be full on, right? So it's like a lifestyle. It's not like a 9-to-5 where you can just switch off at 5 and go, right, done with that bit now. Right, get myself a beer. Let's get a Deliveroo. Other delivery services are available. Get a Deliveroo and off we go. Like it's full on. You feel pressure like the whole time. And so you should do. You're like at the elite end of your sport. You're training towards the Olympic Games. You're always pushing yourself to be the best. I was in that environment for pretty much 10 years, which is a really long time to feel that pressure, both mentally and physically. And I think by the end, and when the end, I say probably like 6 to 12 months before I actually announced my retirement, those thoughts were creeping in about like, is this what I want anymore? Am I able to give it 100% like I used to anymore? Are my priorities still giving everything to hockey anymore? Or, you know, before you just accept that you miss out on things because you have to train, you've got a match, and that's just the sacrifices that you sign up for, you know, whether it be a cousin's wedding or an auntie's 60th birthday. But I was getting to the point where I was like, I want to go to those things now. Like, I want to like be at family events. I want to be with friends. And those kind of thoughts just creeping in just made me think, is being a professional athlete now really, really, really number one in my priority list? And, you know, those thoughts started creeping in, and I just took time just to reflect on a lot of things and those things, and just realised that you need to be all in when you're doing it. You need to be all in both for yourself and for your teammates. And I just realised that I just wasn't anymore, and it's best to step away when I want to and in a healthy way, rather than, you know, some people have said, why don't you just hang on? Why don't you just train? And yeah, I could have done. I could have stayed in that environment and been at functioning at 70% and not really pushing myself and not being the real best version of me as a hockey player and me as a person. And I could have done that. I could have done that, but that's not me. And that's not part of the culture and the environment that GB hockey is about. And it wasn't the right thing to do at all. And so that's why I made the decision to step away and retire. And yeah, like I've mentioned before, I'm super, super happy like with my decision. There's no regrets at all. And that's one of the reasons, that's one of the main things about my retirement, is I wanted to have no regrets. And I don't have that. So I feel really lucky in that sense.
How did the central programme sort of compare to your experience being full on in Holland in the club environment? What were the sort of differences there?
Yeah, so I've experienced it twice in Holland. I've been out twice. I went out when I was 18, and then when I went out when I was well, after Tokyo, I don't even know how old I was, 29, I think. So when I was 18, I was at a club which was training four times a week. So we did Tuesdays, Wednesday double, Friday, and then played on Sunday. The trainings were always really full on. Like, I was like, wow, this is a lot. And I was straight from school into that. They had no emphasis on gym at all. We did like 10 minutes, I think, of core stability before Tuesday sessions. And then we did actually work with like a running trainer such like speed coach on Tuesdays. But it was all pitch. Fitness is always done on the pitch. You're working hard. And there was an expectation to look after yourself. So that really, really, really prepped me for the centralized program, because that was when I was 18 to 21. And all of my other friends were going out and getting absolutely boozed up on Wednesday nights, Saturday nights, and maybe a couple of other nights in between. Whereas we had you weren't allowed to go out during the week. Fridays was a little bit frowned upon about going out, even if it was just for a couple of beers, because you had a match on Sunday. Sundays you were allowed to go out and enjoy yourself and enjoy the weekend. So that's what it was like. And it was I got really introduced to like the team environment and the culture, like really like looked after one another, like enjoyed spending time with each other. Like after training, we would like shower and then club would have dinner for us. Or like in Wednesday when we had a double session, we would train, shower, have like food, watch video, then train again, then shower, have food again. So you like really like got into this like real team environment, which was amazing and definitely like prepped me for like going back in joining the full-time program. The difference was in the evenings / I was usually at the club from like 4 p.m till 10 p.m let's say, whereas the GB stuff was obviously in the day. So then I'm there 4 till 10, so that's what my master's rubbish 6 hours, whereas like with the GB stuff, you're there maybe from like 9 till 3 kind of thing. So it's kind of same, but just different times. And so that's kind of where I learned my trade a lot, both in terms of hockey and also lifestyle and understanding what it takes to be a really good player. So I remember I came back from Holland like so much better. Of course I did. I was training at a really high level. I was looking after myself. I was super fit and I wasn't boozing up like most of the people at uni were, which now I look back and I'm like, oh, I wish I could have had like maybe a year of like uni to like really get my teeth stuck into that side of things. But yeah, it was a great experience. And then when I went out after Tokyo, so there was no plans for me to go out. And then I got an email, I think it was like May or April, and the games were in August, and it was like, oh, are you interested in coming out to Holland? And it was just not really on my radar at all. I was like, no, not really. And then I thought about it and I was like, why not? Like, the league over there is like fantastic. It's the best one. Go and push myself out of my comfort zone. But I was in a really different place in my career then. Like, first time I was 18. So I was this young pup, like really trying to like learn and learn the craft. Whereas I go in when I'm 29, I've got 2 Olympics under my belt. I've got 2 medals under my belt. I'm looked at a little bit differently. It was just a different challenge. Now, for me that year, probably didn't work out how I wanted it to. So the setup was still very similar. So we trained twice on Tuesdays, twice on Thursdays, once on Fridays, and we played on Sundays. So we were training 5 times a week. And then there was an expectation to do 2 gym sessions as well. So again, fairly professional environment, but there was no fitness outside of that. Trainings were full on. Again, like the culture in Holland is you rock up early, you have a chat, you chill out, then you train, you shower, you eat, you do video, and then if you've got another session, you do it again. So it's like very big like culture there to like be really invested in the team and the club. But the on the performance side, it wasn't perhaps the best year. There was a lot of change in the club. So the year that I was there, that the coach and the club parted ways halfway through the first half of the season. We got a new coach in. It's similar to like football in the sense that then you're with a coach who didn't recruit you and didn't know you, found that a bit of a challenge. The team were rock bottom of the league. And then after Christmas, it was kind of like a struggle to get back into it. I then got a back injury, so went back to England to sort that out. And eventually the team at the end of the season got relegated. So it wasn't what I'd kind of hoped for, but, you know, still a good opportunity to go out and play against the best teams and players every Sunday and still, I guess, carry on living that professional hockey life when I wasn't part of the centralised the year after Tokyo.
It's a huge amount of pitch contact time you'll be getting over there. You said obviously there's quite a big difference in terms of the emphasis on physical training as a group compared to in the central programme. Was there much of a difference between those two environments in terms of what those pitch sessions looks like? Was there a difference in style of coaching generally, if you paint in broad brushstrokes, or was it kind of similar?
Yeah. I'll go like really broad, just England compared to Holland. And actually, I've experienced a lot of different training in England. The philosophy has changed a lot in all the international stuff. So I remember when we were in junior stuff, it was like, oh, training was not that hard, and then you'd do running after, and then it would change into training's going to be hard, so you don't need to do running after. Like, you do your conditioning when you're playing hockey. So in Holland, the emphasis is very much, there's always loaded touches on the ball, always. They do a lot of unopposed skills stuff, so a lot of pass and follow drills, always finishes with shots at goal, always practicing new skills. And like every week you would, you know, get a good chunk of time shooting at goal, like whether it be distributing, whether it be aerialing, whether it be whatever. They always end on a small sided game. That I don't think the training session is complete if they don't do a small sided game at the end. And I mean like 7v7, where people get really stuck in and gets competitive. Always do that. For me, there wasn't a huge amount of tactical, let's say, walkthroughs or practices. That was more done on the video. But one of the things about training is you're always moving. There's no cues. You're always on the balls and it's always hard work. And that was like the philosophy in Holland. And that's why I think I improved so much between the age of like 18 and 21, because I was just, I jumped from, you know, like the hours of contact time that I had on the pitch or training just jumped up, and the quality of training was just so much higher than I was used to. So that's kind of the philosophy of hockey in Holland. And you kind of see that in the way that like they play, you know, all the basics are spot on. They run hard, they attack hard, but they also have a huge amount of talent like coming through as well, because just everybody plays it out there. Like the numbers that play there, it's just amazing.
What's your sort of preference for a session as a, or has it changed as you've got older? If you were to go now, your ideal pitch session, what would it look like for you as a player?
Ooh, I would say it'll be, right, I'm going to go real specific here. So I'd like the pitch session, I want it to be about 27, 28 degrees, firstly, in the sunshine. I want it to be start about leisurely 11 o'clock. So that gives me time to go and have some breakfast, maybe go and have a coffee, catch up with someone beforehand. I want it to be a max an hour and a half, maybe an hour 15. Warm-up can be involved with football, love football. So like 5-10 minutes playing, maybe just playing 5-side football, actually.
Down to goals or something like that.
Yeah, go down to goals. Book that out. And then what I'd want to do, I'd want to do some like unopposed pass and follow drill, always finishing with shots at goal. And I would like 200 balls, so then we never have to go and collect them, because I hate collecting balls. And all the balls need to be like the Kookaburra ones, the nice ones. And then what I want to do is, I reckon some sort of like possession game where there's like piggies in the middle, like big rondo, something like that. And then I want like a seven-a-side tournament, like three teams of seven. So it's like get stuck in, competitiveness, proper umpires as well, because we all know coaches are rubbish umpires. I'm a coach, so I can say that.
You've got to make it like, you know, like a match. You're going to get bad decisions.
I agree, and it builds up players' resilience. But on the flip side, as a player, when you've got a rubbish umpire, like it's anyway. And then, so then that would be an hour 15, maybe. It's 28 degrees. It's great. And then I'd like to carry on the social side and go do something, go get maybe a coffee, or, you know, now I'm retired, a beer after training, and that can be done.
That's quite an early beer if you're training at 11:15.
Yeah, but then over lunch maybe.
Like, yeah, it's very continental.
One beer. That's fine, right?
I'm gonna throw a curveball out there, because so going back to my old club, we obviously currently don't have all Kookaburra Double Dimples, but there's something really satisfying at finding like the dog ball in the bag and standing behind someone you really don't like and feeding them the dog ball on a shooting drill. And you just watch their hands, like concrete hands on the shot. It's a great game. I love that.
Oh, we had that training last night actually at Reading. Like we are lucky, we've got the double ones, but then there's like, God, I sound like such a ball snob. Then you got like some of the, I call them the dog balls, like the Saturn, is it the Saturn ones? And like
Saturns are quite nice.
Oh,
you've been in the central program too long. You're spoiled.
I'm showing my true colors here. So I like started playing with one of those. I went, stop, we need to get rid of this ball, and just I was like, stop the drill, new ball. Like such a brat behavior. So Kookaburra, if you're listening, your balls are great. Reading Hockey Club would like a few more, because we seem to have lost loads.
I'll have some Kookaburras if they're sending balls out. Gav?
Yeah, I'll take a few.
So one thing that's a difficult situation for you, obviously, there was a period you've spent quite a few chunks of time injured as a player. There was 17 months where you missed the Commonwealth Games and the World Cup because of the concussion. As a player, how do you deal with that psychologically, just the absence of something that's obviously the main part of your life or a really significant part of your life, but also that sort of semi-detached nature from the team of being an injured recovering athlete?
Yeah, bringing out a cliche here, like injuries are just part and parcel of being a professional athlete. Like if you don't have an injury going through your whole career, like go and buy yourself a lottery ticket, because they're just part and parcel of it. When I was away, I don't know if I mentioned it, but I've been away for 6 weeks in 35 degree heat. When I was away, I was talking to one of my close friends out there, and we got brought up about injuries. And we figured out that in my 10-year career, I was out injured for a cumulative of about 4.5 years of that, which is a long time when I think about it. Because she said, do you think your injuries played a part in you retiring? And I went, no, I don't think they did. And then we looked at that, I went, oh, that's quite a long time being out injured. Like that has got to like play some part in my decision-making. So I remember 2013, I joined a program and I was out about 6 months with an ankle injury. 2014, I was out for 8 months with a different ankle injury. 2015, I had my appendix out and it essentially went wrong. It got an infection. I was out for 4 months rather than like 4 weeks. 2016, I ruptured a ligament in my thumb tendon. I don't even know what it was. I was out for 4 months. 2017 was a good year. I think I was only out for 2 months with a knee injury. 2018, that's when I had my concussion. I was actually out for like nearly a year with a concussion and then straight into a really random knee injury. So that was the 17 months. So that went into 2019. 2019 was 6 months. 2020, the year that was meant to be the Olympics, it was COVID. I remember first really competitive session back after rules and regulations and lockdown and blah, 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 blah. I did my ankle. So I was out for like 3 months with my ankle. 2021, I want to say I was clear in 2021. 2022 was my back. So that was like 3 months with my back. Then I had my concussion. I don't even know when that was. God, it all goes into one. Then I was 5 months with a concussion, I think. The back end of 2022 going into 2023, and then I retired in 2023. So nearly every year I've had a significant injury, which has took me out for like 4 months, which is a lot. I think the skills you learn mentally are like you become resilient, really resilient, and you get a very much a bigger picture on life as well. You have an appreciation for when you're back on the pitch and don't take things for granted at all. You can celebrate like the little wins. You know, I remember when I was back, I was just so grateful to be back rather than complaining about what balls there are at training or the weather conditions like I am now. Yeah, it's tough. You learn a lot about yourself, a lot, because you're not allowed to do something which you really want to do, and a big part of your identity has been taken away. And what I would say, which really, really helped me throughout my whole career, is I've had an identity away from hockey. I've had friends away from hockey. I've had things going on away from hockey, which really, really helps, because when hockey's not going well or you can't do it, you go to that and start put energy in that part of your life. So that was like a real... I'm really thankful for that part. Like, there's some, I've got some friends who, they don't really care about hockey. I never speak to them about hockey. They're like, what are you doing now? Where are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm just about to fly to Tokyo. They're like, oh, the Olympics are soon, aren't they? Like, in the nicest possible way, they don't care that much, which is great. And it's really refreshing. And it just gets you out of that kind of hockey world. And my family are kind of the same. They just take me so out of the hockey world. And that, looking back, those kind of things really, really helped me just stay with it and stay balanced. And also just becoming more and more prominent now, and people are talking about it more. But I did do a lot of work with like psychologists when I was injured, so I was really lucky to be able to work with some really, really good ones, certainly in my early career, like Andrea first, who worked with us in the Rio cycle. I absolutely loved working with her, and she was absolutely great for me and my rehabs, and just really helped with that balance word that I was on about. So yeah, injuries, I've had a lot of them, feel like I'm fairly well equipped in dealing with them now, unfortunately. Did it have a part to play in my retirement? I don't know, maybe, but I don't know. But it is just a real, one of the parts of playing the game and being a professional athlete, especially when they're like back-to-back injuries are just the worst, or setbacks after setbacks.
How many of those ankle injuries were from going down to Power League, or any of those sneaky football ones?
Yeah, two-footed challenge from someone after I've given them a shove into the boards, yeah. No, I had to stop playing football when I started taking hockey a bit more seriously. But now I do still take hockey seriously with Reading, of course, but I am thinking about starting up again, going down five-a-side. Maybe those ankle injuries might return.
Yeah. You've spoken there about working with a psychologist through an injury, and obviously there's a huge breadth of transferable skills you'll develop as a sports person. In your current work outside of hockey that you're doing, what of those skills do you feel like you're most tapping into?
That's my boss, this. I think things which athletes almost just take for granted, which I'm learning, is the work ethic, the getting stuff done, and the not stopping until you get stuff done. If I've got a project to do, well, then I'll do it and I'll finish it. And it doesn't matter if it takes me longer than like my working hours, because that's what you do. You just finish things. And also doing it with care and doing it with diligence. I think that's one thing that I've taken into my working world. Also the ability to communicate with a lot of different styles and types of people. When you're working in a team, when you've got 30 plus individuals, plus all the support staff, plus all the wider team as well, you meet a lot of different people in high pressured environments, and you have to collaborate. So I think that's one thing as well. And the work that I'm doing at the moment is in the sporting world as well. So I've taken like the knowledge of like professional sport and elite sport with me in that sense. But those two things, definitely. I'm saying this though, it's still challenging, like transitioning out of elite sport. Your job is running around chasing after the ball, to be on a train at like 7:50 going through Oxford Circus when it's really busy. You're like, oh, when I was an athlete, I was still in bed at this point. Like, this is a change. And just getting used to the new norm. But it's a challenge that I'm enjoying. There's still tough times to it, of course, but I still get my hockey fix at Reading, right? So I've not gone cold turkey, and that's going really well. Really enjoying the girls, the group, working with Rob, the coach, and also we're doing pretty well. You know, we're second in the league after nearly being relegated last year, so that's going really well, and I'm enjoying still having that like hockey itch scratched, if that makes sense. Not going total full turkey, because I still love the sport, right? I may have retired from international, but I still love playing the sport and I still really enjoy it. It's just, it wasn't for me as a full-time job, you know.
So yeah, looking at Reading, obviously, as you say, they're having a cracking season. what's the sort of vibe like at the moment? It's from the outside, you look at Reading, they were absolutely gunned probably about 15 years ago, and they've tapered off, gone down, and then they seem to be in a really upward curve at the moment. So what's it looking like?
Yeah, it's looking really positive. Like, it's a pretty steep upward curve. Like, this is only our second year back in the Prem after getting promoted from the Conference Northwest. I don't know what the league structure is anymore. So second year back in the Prem. Like I said, last year we were, I think, 1 point off being relegated. So it's really positive. We had a bit of a reset meeting last night, and it was came up some really good things. What's really great is we've got this real great balance between wanting to win, wanting to perform well, wanting to give it our all, but also wanting to have fun as well. And it's a really great, like, healthy balance that we've got going on. And I think that shows in the way that we are as a group, the way that results are going. It has a lot to say for team morale, cohesion, camaraderie. Quite a lot of the group have been together for a while, which helps. And we've got some really, like, great new additions, both on pitch and but also off pitch as well, which is really, really important, because essentially we play, when I say we, the Reading players, we play to have fun, right? It's a hobby. It's something that should be enjoyable. We're not professional players. All of us work or study. We're all amateur. None of us get paid to play. Like, we're there to have fun. So we should earn that right to have fun as well and have fun at training. But we still have this really, like, nice balance of wanting to win and do well as well. So yeah, it's going really well. We've obviously secured Premier League status for next season, which was one of our goals at the start of the season. So to have done it at Christmas is great. And now it's just, like, kicking on and seeing where this half of the season can go. Yeah, we're going into the unknown a little bit. None of the girls have kind of experienced this bit of the league before with Reading. But yeah, we're in a really, really good place. We've got our final friendly coming up this weekend, and then we kick off against East Grinstead on the 10th.
You say non-professional players, you're there to have fun. Fun's kind of a loaded word, because it means different things to different people, I think. What does that look like to you? What does fun around hockey look like to you?
Yeah, now, so you're right, it's different. And everyone in Reading is different, and we're all here for different reasons, right? And yeah, as coaches, you have to tap into those reasons. So for fun, for some of the girls I know, is competition and winning. You know, they want to train in a competitive environment and have something on it, and that's fun for them, whereas that doesn't tick the boxes for other people. So for me, yeah, it's a really good question, and I've had to kind of recalibrate where I sit with hockey, because for the last 10 years, yes, it has been about fun, but it's very much more about, like, performance and pushing yourself and being the best and giving 100% the whole time and putting pressure on yourself to do that. And the expectation is that you do that, and the expectation is you train, like, well. And, you know, if I don't train well, I was really annoyed and, okay, why not? So I've just had to recalibrate that a little bit as well. So much lower expectations on myself. Of course, I'm not going to be as good and sharp as I was when I was training like 8-9 times a week, when I only train twice a week now and I don't live an athlete lifestyle. But for me, what I want to get out of club hockey with Reading is essentially what I said at the beginning of this conversation. It's about the best balance between performance. So getting the most out of what we can do with the resources that we've got. And I reckon we're probably hitting that at the moment. And also fun. For me, it's like having a laugh at training, connecting with the girls, enjoying like a beer or two after the game, having that team camaraderie, and whatever happens like on a Saturday in terms of performance. And I think we've got this really well at Reading. Like, we're still happy. You know, there's no sulking. It's not like, oh, well, we're planning to go for dinner, but because we lost, now we're not going for dinner because everyone's in a bad mood because we lost. No. Like, it's not the be all and end all. I feel like we've got a really good balance with that at Reading. So that's fun for me. It's still wanting to win. I don't think I'm as competitive as, well, I'm not as competitive as when I was playing internationally. Like, it doesn't mean as much. Of course, I still want to win. I still have that competitive spirit in me. Like, when I go to park runs and stuff, they're not competitive, but in my mind, they're like a race. And then I get beaten by like a 12-year-old boy who just like runs past me and I'm like fuming. But I still want to win. Of course I do. But it's just a recognition and a recalibration that it's a hobby and it doesn't define my mood half as much as it did when I was professional. And you're able to relax a lot more after sessions or also in sessions as well, to be honest.
How do you feel as a sort of player coach or more senior player now? And then obviously compare it to when you were playing for the GB girls, when they come into like the club scene, can there sometimes be like a frustration from them because it's like, oh, not that they've dropped down the level, obviously, to play in the club. Oh, what happened?
Did you just boot Shona out the call, Gav?
She hated that question.
I hated Gav's question as well. Like, I'd have left.
Yeah, sorry, I just hate the question. No, I don't know if anyone else gets this. My laptop, when it gets cold, it just turns off. So I was on like 50% battery, and now it's telling me there's no battery. So maybe it's time for a new laptop.
See, it's not just you that's missing 35 degrees.
Yeah, it's the laptop as well. The laptop got left behind for 6 weeks and didn't have any attention. So now it's throwing its toys out of the pram and just turning off when it wants to.
having played for you, Gav, by the way, I can testify he does get frustrated when people mistrap the ball because they're not at the same level as you used to.
I don't know if you want to go over that question again, because I'm not gonna lie, well, dropped out, laptop had a
no, that's fine. I can try and be a bit more concise. I was kind of getting around to that point. As a player coach, when you're moving from the GB program into a club setup, again, the sort of regular quality of player isn't going to be on the same level. Can it be frustrating for the girls moving into the club scene, or do they just sort of view it in a different way? Yeah, what were your experiences as a player, but also now having had that experience, how can you help those players sort of integrate more into the club scene like you have? And then, and I was going to say on the flip side, like the players getting to obviously train with that level of player, like how much does the session ramp up when those 4 or 5 girls come into your club setup?
This was the more concise version of his question, by the way.
Yeah, I can't be concise. I can't be concise.
There's a lot to unpick there, isn't there? I'm just not sure where to start. So I guess I'll start with me, because that's easier to talk about me and my experiences. So I remember when I was still training GB and then training at Reading, it was a recalibration of expectations. Of course, the Reading sessions or the club sessions are not going to be same as GB. Like, it would be weird if it was. And so you're there to help the team. You're there to get something different out of hockey, whether it be like the social or like mixing with other people. You're there to help others grow as well. So it might be you lead a bit more on like tactical things or like share technical things. But it's you're there for different reasons. Now, as a someone who's not in the program and in this player assistant coach role as well, that adds another dimension. Again, go back to my favorite word at the moment, it's just recalibrating like what you want to get out of it. So for me now, this is my only hockey. Yeah, there's nothing else. So it is different. Well, one, I feel a lot fresher when I go into trainings because I've not trained like twice already that day. So I'm able to really like go for it how I want to go for it, because when you were in the centralized, like you are tired, and that's just how it is. So I feel like a lot fresher now. I also know that these are my only hockey sessions that I'm going to get. So I've got to get the most out of them. Also in the back of my mind, it's still about having fun. And then that's just me as a player. And then I also need to think about, well, I'm not going to be as sharp as I used to be. So it's lowering those expectations. Like, I was getting annoyed with myself on Tuesday was my first session back. And I was like rusty as. And I was getting annoyed with myself. So I was like, well, I'm not where I need to be. I'm like, well, of course you're not. You've been away for 6 weeks. You haven't picked up hockey stick for 2 months. And you're not a full-time athlete anymore. So of course you're not going to be where you used to be. And that is difficult. That is sometimes I get really frustrated by, but I'm working on it. And then for me as well, I've got the coaching kind of string to my bow as well. So one of my roles there is obviously to coach, to develop players, both from a technically and a tactically point of view. And so that's one of my aims when I go to training as well, is to you know, feedback to players, help bring them on a bit more whilst also playing. Like it's a difficult balance, and I don't get it right all the time, but it's fun. And then the third, I guess, part of your long, actually, no, really concise question was about when the GB girls come back in. And again, it's like they're recalibrating their expectations of training. Like it's not like it is at GB and they're there for a different reason, but it is like great when they are there. And we at Reading have been very deliberate about not having too many, because when you only allowed access to the players one in every four training sessions, it is difficult. It's, you know, if you've got a squad of 16 and you know 10 are GB players, what are you going to be left with? Six players. So we've been pretty deliberate about having low numbers of GB players, so it's not overly disruptive when they're not there. So when they come in, it just brings everybody up a bit, you know. Those players who react well to being pushed, they step up a bit more. The leadership from the girls, that brings people up more. I think that pushes me up a little bit more. It's natural, right, when you get them back. So it does bring it up a little bit more, and it is great. And they bring, you know, like a standard setting. It's more maybe physically they're not able to bring it how they want to bring it because they've trained twice that day or whatever it may be. But, you know, in terms of tactically and understanding, in terms of like bringing extra knowledge to the game, we've got a very young squad and they respond pretty well to that.
You're saying you're now working with coaching with the group as well. I always think as a coach, you're a bit of a patchwork quilt of different experiences and people that you've met, like some things you like and you add it as a patchwork to your quilt. Where are you at with that? Like, who have been those influencers that you want to try and steal from, and what bits are you stealing from in terms of Coach Shona?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Sometimes I think people expect coaches to be like the whole package, and that's just not the case. I think as a coaching team, you need to be as close as possible as a close package. For me as a coach, I mean, my hockey career is founded on doing the basics really well and working hard. And that was instilled for me when I was 6 years old, when I went to Newark Hockey Club. My first ever hockey coach, Christine Ferguson, fortunately she's not with us anymore, but she was a huge influence on my career, instilling the importance of basics, 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 and also working like hard. Like I used to hate it, but we used to do like, we had to run and touch every goal on the hockey pitch. And as a little like 7-8 year old, I was like petrified of that because it felt such a long way. Essentially, it wasn't that far, but with my little legs at that age, it felt really far. And so that for me has stuck with me throughout my career. And it's also with my coaching stuff as well. Like I'm big on like nailing basics, having time to do the basics, but also making them fun and a bit challenging at the same time. Like I'm not the kind of coach which is like, right, girls, we're going to practice hitting now. So one of you stand on the baseline, one of you stand on the 25, and we'll do this for 10 minutes. And then like, no, you can incorporate it and add some sort of competition and movement to it as well, where it's essentially the same, but I'm just adding different elements to it. So for me, coaching style, very big on the basics, very big on working hard. With Reading, I'm quite big on like the tactical understanding of the players and helping them understand that side of things, because that was a big part of my game, being able to understand the game.
How do you develop that with the players?
We do it a few different ways. Obviously, we film all our games and we get them all coded up. So we have a video session once a week. But during the week, I will send clips to girls. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And then also during training as well, especially when we're doing, you know, drills, which are decision-making ones, it was like, okay, what was your thought process there? What principles are we trying to stick to here? So okay, so we're underloaded, they have no pressure to the ball, their eyes are up, what are we thinking defensively wise? And so just like reminding them of like the set kind of the principles that we have, and then, you know, there's obviously nuances, but in session live coaching, I think, is really crucial. And it's not a case of stopping the drill being like, right, everybody stop. Look what Shona did here. What should you know? It's just the conversations, the little conversations here and there. And then also giving the players time to chat about like the tactical stuff as well. So, you know, let's say at the end of the session, we've got like 4 6-minute stints of like 7-a-side. Okay, well, we're going to have like 2 minutes in between, and it's just tactical focus. So your focus now is talking about how we're going to win the ball higher up, for example. So just always constantly drip feeding that in. So those are kind of like my three main coaching, I guess, principles. And then also like the team culture, team togetherness, team fun aspect of that as well. Like I'm fairly big at that at Reading. I think it really just brings everybody together. So making sure that people are enjoying themselves, and there's, you know, like in most clubs, you know, or most teams, you have your social sex and you have your fines and you do this, and just making sure there's like little bits and bobs going on which people can tap into. And so you're not just going to play hockey and leaving. If you want to do that, you can absolutely do that. But there's other stuff going on around the team setup as well.
Thank you very much for coming on today. It's a
great chat. We're done.
You've got a very tight calendar, so
I do a little bit. Yeah, I am. Apology that I'm quite busy at the moment, but no, it's been great. It's been like a little like reflection of my career, which has been quite therapeutic, really. Yeah, it's been great. So thanks so much for having me on.
It's great. And if anyone would like to join Shona's 5-a-side Power League team, just get in touch. We're looking in the Reading area.
Yeah, you might be top of the list if you let me know. Apparently just me. Actually, no, there's another girl that's keen. So we've got two. I don't mind going to goal either, so we don't need a goalie.
That makes a big difference.
Rush goalie like I used to do at the playground at school.
Good question, though. If you were to make a hockey, football playing 5-a-side team, because I know the Dutch like love, they're pretty good at football as well. Like the girls love a kickabout.
Yeah.
Choose you plus 4 others from your hockey career that know their way around the 5-a-side football pitch. Who's in?
Oh, do you know what? We had this discussion when I was back at Bisham, because we brought the football out before training, and some players got really offended that I didn't put them in the team. Okay, so I would obviously be in it. I would say Sarah Jones. I want to say she may have done some Wales stuff as a junior. I'm not sure. That might be absolute rumours, but she was pretty good. I'm going to also include Sarah Robertson, because I remember, I'm pretty sure when we had this conversation, she was like really miffed that she wasn't in it. So just for like, yeah.
She's international stuff. So she's good. She's good.
Yeah, she is. No, she is good. So just
very
to save myself some ag. Yeah.
Very GB inclusive already. Very always. Political. Yeah.
It's 2023. No, it's 2024. We have to be now. So I'd include Sarah Jones, Sarah Robertson, myself. Oh, who else? Lily Walker's quite handy, actually. Sarah Robertson, myself, Sarah Jones, we're all quite old, so we need a bit of youth. Lily Walker's quite young and energetic and youthful. And we need one more player. So what have we got? We've got age, we've got experience, we've got fun.
Are you going in goal for this team? Or are you
gonna... Yeah, I'll go rush goalie, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah.
We need some flair. Where's the flair coming from?
Yeah, so that what are we not hitting? Flair. Or someone who's going to like just put in a big 2-foot tackle.
Yeah, a bit of chaos, yeah.
Flair. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking Lily Owsley, but... She never used to join in with the football, but
she did football, I think, when she was younger.
Yeah, she did, but she never used to join in with the football. So she always said how good she was, but never actually joined in that much. So maybe it was all chat. So maybe her, but that could be really confusing as a team when you've got Sarah, Lily, and Shona. So she might not get in, but just purely on that basis. I'm trying to think who else was really good. Oh, Helen Richardson Walsh was pretty good.
I've played table tennis against her. She's really good at table tennis as well.
She grew up in a house full of boys, brothers. She's competitive, I tell you that. So I reckon I'd bring her back. and she can like pull the string. She's not, I don't know if she's flair though, but no, let's put her in. So I think that's a good team. And then do we need a coach?
Yeah.
Well, one of you two can be our coach.
Scottish football managers tend to do quite well, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've seen Gav does really good pre-game presentations, generally involving terrible PowerPoint animations. So from that point alone, like,
yeah, I've got the pre-match.
What about post-match? What are we doing post-match, coach?
Yeah, straight to the beers. It's got to be the beers.
Big Sunday sesh down the pub to watch the 2 o'clock game, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. The game has to be like 12 o'clock so you get to the pub for Super Sunday. Like,
Remember, it has to be 28 degrees and fairly warm.
Yeah, that's the challenging part.
Not Dundee then, Gav.
It's the sunniest city in Scotland. Guaranteed sun, but not very warm sun.
Well, there you go. I'm sure people will be gutted not to be picked again, Shona.
Yeah, send all complaints to you guys. You can yeah, forward them on
to Gav Byers, please.
Gav.Byers@fiveasidefootball.com.
Thank you for coming on anyway. It's great to chat.
More than welcome, guys. It's been great fun. And good luck with the rest of your ventures.
Yeah, good luck. Is it East Grinstead first, did you say?
Yes, on the 10th.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Best of luck for that. And thanks, have a great second half of the season.
Cheers, guys. All the best.
Thank you for listening. I hope you tune in again next time for some more Left Field Thinking. Goodbye for now.